Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. In this episode, we have stories on today's cannabis helicopter activity, the Miranda's rescue investigation, possible employee ownership for retirement-impacted businesses, and the DCC puts out a statement on the safety of metric tags. But first, some local alerts and updates. This is KMUD News. Starting off with news from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Highlighting the dynamic nature of California's ocean ecosystem, California Department of Fish and Wildlife Acting Director Valerie Termini closed the recreational razor clam fishery in Del Norte County, following a recommendation from state health agencies that consumption of razor clams in the area poses a significant human health threat for domoic acid exposure. Razor clam sampling from Crescent Beach in Del Norte County in mid-July found clams exceeding the current domoic acid federal action level. Domoic acid is a potent neurotoxin and can accumulate in fish without the organism itself becoming ill. At low levels, domoic acid exposure can cause nausea, diarrhea, and dizziness in humans. At higher levels, it can cause persistent short-term memory loss, seizures, and in some cases, can be fatal. The recreational razor clam fishery in Humboldt County remains closed due to elevated levels of domoic acid. The closure, which began in May of 2024, remains in effect until state health agencies determine razor clams no longer pose a health risk. CDFW will continue to work with the California Department of Public Health and Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment to collect, monitor, and analyze razor clams to determine when the recreational razor clam fishery can be reopened safely in those areas. In Garberville, according to reporting by Redheaded Black Belt, the Mexican restaurant El Cora has been closed due to multiple health code violations. According to an inspector, quote, due to imminent health hazard cockroaches, this facility must cease operation and the permit to operate is suspended by this office, end quote. The restaurant is being required to contract with a pest control service and address all pest issues before reopening. An inspection also found multiple food temperature violations, with foods held at temperatures that can lead to bacteria growth and illness. The restaurant's dishwasher also contained no sanitizing liquids. El Cora will need to be reinspected with all violations addressed in order to reopen. In southern Mendocino, a wildfire named the Feliz Fire broke out just northwest of Hopland in Mendocino County on Saturday afternoon. The fire caused evacuation orders in the area and quickly spread to around 872 acres. Those orders have since been lifted. The fire also briefly fully closed Highway 101 in the area on Saturday. By late Saturday night, forward progress of the fire had been stopped, and as of this recording, firefighters had achieved 30% containment. Up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. Shannon Miranda and Sheriff Hansel argue publicly over the ongoing Miranda's rescue investigation, KMUD News reports. Arguments over the continuing Miranda's rescue investigation hit a new crescendo before the weekend. On Friday, Shannon Miranda himself released a public statement where he made direct accusations against Humboldt Sheriff William Hansel and his wife Jody. Miranda began his statement with, quote, media coverage, social media posts, and law enforcement have continued to distort the truth about Miranda's rescue and me. I have fully cooperated with the investigation and provided everything requested, including my records, computers, and phones. I have been forthright and honest. The same cannot be said of the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office or my neighbors, Jenna Moore and Jennifer Raymond, end quote. Shannon Miranda's issuing of a public statement is highly irregular for suspects in investigative cases. Generally, lawyers advise against speaking publicly when a case is headed for likely trial and there is an active investigation by law enforcement. Miranda's wide-ranging personal statement goes on to detail a few key claims. With this story, we want to summarize Shannon Miranda's main points, the near instantaneous reply provided by Sheriff Hansel, and information behind the statements, including the purported involvement of Sheriff Hansel's wife, Jody Hansel. Screenshots posted online since May and allegedly written by Jody Hansel include the comment, quote, "Yes, dig it up, the whole thing, and deep," end quote, in response to a Facebook user posting a link to an article about animals being shot at Miranda's rescue. Another screenshot showed Jody Hansel stating support in a comment on an alleged post by Jenna Moore, one of the neighbors adjacent to Miranda's rescue, who tipped law enforcement off to Shannon's alleged illegal killings of dogs on his property. No known posts or comments by Jody Hansel have occurred since May regarding the Miranda's rescue case. Shannon Miranda's statement also alleges that the Humboldt Sheriff's Department is releasing selective information for publicity, and that his neighbors Jenna Moore and Jennifer Raymond are being dishonest. The statement goes on to claim that the sheriff's office is using, quote, Gestapo tactics, and that, quote, inaccurate information and lies circulating about this case have fueled rumors, threats, and hostility towards my family and me, end quote. The statement's main arguments detail that Miranda's rescue euthanized dogs only in situations where it is allegedly wholly necessary due to primarily aggression and the inability to be safely adopted. Shannon also claims that shelters sent him dogs that were heavily drugged and sedated, and that other shelters refused to take dogs back when asked. Shannon also claims that all animals were buried legally, and that he followed the law when it comes to animal euthanasia and burial. Shannon Miranda's statement was sent to Redheaded Black Belt by the Harlan Law Firm at 1:18 p.m. on Friday. And within a matter of hours, Sheriff William Hansel had published a written response. Such a quick turnaround is unusual when it comes to communications with law enforcement and speaks to the severity and attention surrounding the Miranda's rescue case. Sheriff Hansel's response to Shannon Miranda was decidedly nondescriptive. The majority of the statement states his department's responsibility to conduct a thorough investigation, review, and analysis of evidence. Hansel also stated he will not rush the investigative process and that decisions on criminal prosecution will be based on a complete and accurate understanding of facts, along with stating that his department would only release limited information appropriate for a criminal investigation. Information released so far detailed the mass burial sites of hundreds of dogs, along with clear indications of bullet trauma across multiple animals. The only point Shannon Miranda made that Hansel attacked directly was over seized items and that an inventory had been completed and is available via the court record. Shannon Miranda had stated, quote, "Despite numerous requests, the sheriff still has not provided me with the list of items taken from my home and the rescue property during their searches, as promised," end quote. It's unclear what Shannon Miranda is specifically referring to. There is a current public records request for the list Sheriff Hansel referenced, and will report back on the list of items taken from the property when published. Shannon Miranda also has additional legal pressure, as the Oakland-based Rocket Dog Rescue has filed a civil complaint against Miranda's rescue. Rocket Dog Rescue released a statement that read in part, quote, "We did not make this decision lightly, and we are moving forward because this is about accountability." Rocket Dog transferred four dogs, Polly, Paddington, Scooby, and Rover, to Miranda's rescue on March 1st. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office later informed us that microchips associated with Polly, Paddington, and Scooby were recovered during its investigation of canine remains found on the property. We have since communicated with Rover's adopter and independently confirmed his adoption. At the time of the transfer, Rocket Dog was not aware of the investigation or allegations involving Miranda's rescue. We believed all four dogs would be safe in an environment represented as better suited to their needs. We were later told that Polly, Paddington, and Scooby had also been adopted, and nothing in our direct interactions or the updates we received led us to question that information or believe any of the dogs were in danger. The civil complaint alleges that those representations concerning Polly, Paddington, and Scooby were false, end quote. For now, the Miranda's rescue case sits in a strange limbo of national coverage, public condemnation, ongoing investigations, and still, no criminal charges. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. The now infamous cannabis enforcement helicopter was back in southern Humboldt today, but we now know more about the operations behind it, KMUD News reports. The helicopter, funded by the Northern California Coalition to Safeguard Communities, or NCCSC, and operated by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department, was back for more likely cannabis enforcement operations today, Monday, August 3rd. Most of the activity, per usual, occurred in areas of southern Humboldt that had already been surveyed by previous NCCSC helicopter activity in past weeks. That included the Bryceland, Salmon Creek, and Honeydew regions of southern Humboldt. One resident reported that their property has now been visited by the helicopter four times in recent memory. The story of the NCCSC and the sheriffs and funding behind it is currently a tangled web. The nonprofit is funded by the Howard Buffett Foundation and supports cannabis enforcement operations across multiple Northern California counties, including Lake, Siskiyou, Mendocino, Humboldt, and Trinity County. The NCCSC-funded helicopter is registered to Butte County, but Butte left the coalition during the 2024 to 2025 financial year, according to a Humboldt County staff report. While KMUD News is still actively investigating the NCCSC's operations and funding efforts, we do know a little bit about the support provided directly through the organization to sheriff's departments. What's strange about the arrangement is that funding to the NCCSC via the Howard Buffett Foundation is controlled directly by its treasurer and Mendocino County Sheriff Matt Kendall, along with NCCSC President and Humboldt County Sheriff William Hansel. Documents obtained via a public records request by Roger Coriel of Mendocino Voice show Sheriff William Hansel signing off on $33,223 of funding to the Lake County Sheriff's Office for fiscal year 2025 to 2026. Hansel's sign-off includes stating, quote, "Congratulations, and we look forward to seeing progress in the NCCSC mission," end quote. Line items include overtime pay for personnel, 3 forensic laptops, and 4 Cellebrite Insiets, which allow law enforcement to extract data from locked electronic devices, including Android and Apple smartphones. Interestingly, listed items provided by the NCCSC for the Lake County Sheriff's Department also include Faraday bags for phones and laptops. A Faraday bag is lined with a material that keeps all electronic signals fully blocked from contents inside the locked bag. The NCCSC funding appears to go to surveillance tools and to protecting sheriff's departments from being surveilled themselves. It also makes clear that Northern California Coalition to Safeguard Communities funding goes far beyond the infamous enforcement helicopter. Today, Monday, August 3rd, Kim Kemp at Redheaded Black Belt published an article entitled, "Mendocino's Cannabis Crackdown, Sheriff Kendall Talks Labor Trafficking, Organized Crime, and Environmental Damage." In the piece, Sheriff Kendall details the exact same claims he made to KMUD News last week, including, in some cases, word-for-word, identical responses. While that is not unusual among media outlets, it is unusual that the responses were in many cases identical, word-for-word, to those provided by NCCSC and Humboldt Sheriff's Department Public Information Officer Summer Hansen, who also had a confirmed presence during some of the Mendocino Sheriff's cannabis enforcement operations during July. Sheriff Kendall also stated to Kim Kemp that his office is waiting for reports from partner agencies on environmental violations. Quote, "The illegal water diversions and environmental degradation statistics are not currently available as investigators are awaiting environmental reports from allied and cooperating agencies," end quote. As previously reported, we received a response from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife regarding cannabis enforcement by the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office during July. Here's their reply in full. Quote, CDFW did not directly assist MCSO on any cannabis operations MCSO led during July. However, we do have one CDFW warden assigned to the Department of Justice Eradication and Prevention of Illicit Cannabis Program and are aware that they provided support to the MCSO. CDFW at this time has not been asked to follow up on anything specific resulting from any cannabis operations MCSO led in July. MCSO provided assistance to CDFW for a couple of cannabis enforcement operations we led in Mendocino County in July, where fish and game code violations, including water diversions, were documented. Those investigations are ongoing, end quote. So, either Sheriff Kendall's or CDFW's statements aren't adding up. Kendall is claiming to have taken the lead on these massive cannabis investigations, but CDFW is claiming no involvement with operations led by the Mendocino County Sheriff's Department. Pesticides are dealt with by the California Department of Pesticide Regulation, but any other environmental violations would likely be under CDFW's purview. We also still have zero confirmed cases this year of human trafficking found through NCCSC-related operations in Humboldt and Mendocino counties. As for Humboldt County, we'll have to see if today's visit by the NCCSC Cannabis Enforcement Helicopter results in any follow-up operations in the coming days. What is clear is that the NCCSC has become a multifaceted element of cannabis enforcement by our local sheriff's departments, both on and off the ground. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Humboldt County's aging population includes many business owners, and a nonprofit group is offering assistance with transitions to employee ownership. Daniel Mintz reports.
With what's described as a wave of Humboldt County business owner retirements looming, a national organization is offering assistance with transitions to employee ownership. Project Equity is, quote, a national nonprofit focused on expanding employee ownership, said Tyler Rivera, Project Equity's ecosystem development manager, during a July 22nd online presentation to the Community Economic Resilience Consortium. Succession planning is relevant to Humboldt County businesses, as the owners of many of them are aged 55 or older, and Rivera said a silver tsunami looms. Humboldt has about 1,300 businesses with owners who are 55 or older, collectively employing about 12,000 people, he continued. That represents over $400 million in annual payroll and $2 billion in annual revenue. With only 30% of businesses transferring within families and 20% of those up for sale finding buyers, transition to employee ownership is a way to preserve a business and its community value. Rivera said it's also relevant in an area of widespread lack of opportunities for economic mobility and pathways to financial security, and that dynamic is seen locally.
31% of households in Humboldt County don't earn enough to cover their basic living expenses today. More than 20% of residents receive food assistance from the state, which is double the statewide rate. And over 6% of workers who are employed full-time, year-round, manage to still fall below the poverty line, which is almost triple the statewide rate. So there are very real challenges, which we know you're all aware of, that are facing the county in terms of cost of living and quality of life, which we believe employee ownership can help to address.
Rivera cited research that found employee ownership results in higher wages and better access to benefits, increased productivity, and greater profit margins. For business owners, it fulfills the goals of, quote, ensuring that the company they've built continues to thrive, providing community for their employees and their customers, and receiving a fair price for the business that's going to support their retirement goals. Project Equity Senior Manager Megan Gordon described some of the criteria Project Equity considers.
Most of my job probably 70% of my day, my work week, is talking to small business owners who are exploring whether employee ownership is a possible fit for them. And so the first thing I'm looking for is I want to see a business with at a minimum 10 employees. If I'm looking at an ESOP, I want to see that number higher. I want to see it closer to like 40, although maybe 35 would be okay. I need the business to be profitable, and there's a reason for that. We are going to do a leveraged buyout of the business. So what we're going to do is we're going to effectively help the business take out a loan to buy itself on behalf of its employees. So the business can't be sitting under a lot of debt, and it needs to be running at a profit, because we're going to use the future profits of that business to pay back the debt that's going to be incurred in order to transact the sale.
A final stage of Project Equity's assistance involves, quote, staying engaged with the newly created employee-owned company for anywhere up to 3 years, Gordon continued. Rivera said employee ownership also hinges on broad collaboration with, quote, players across the private, public, nonprofit, and financial sectors in order to support the development and success of employee-owned companies. Elected and civic leaders, which Rivera described as employee ownership champions, play important roles of support and advocacy.
The reason why they're so important is that employee ownership, despite all of our work, remains kind of the best kept secret in the small business ecosystem. And we know that there's a big knowledge gap surrounding employee ownership, and that awareness continues to be fairly limited. Employee ownership champions are essential to addressing this knowledge gap by using their platforms to increase the visibility of employee ownership so that it's well known and normalized within small business ecosystems and communities. And these champions can include elected officials, economic development organizations, philanthropy funders, and basically any organization that has a platform and is willing to use it to talk about the merits of employee ownership.
During a discussion segment, Lila Roberts, the former executive director of the North Coast Small Business Development Center, vouched for Project Equity, saying, quote, they are superb professionals, they're really collaborative, and I had great experiences working with them through the SBDC. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The DCC released a statement to licensees on the safety of metric tags, KMUD News reports. The California Department of Cannabis Control, known as the DCC, released a statement to licensees detailing counterpoints to claims originally by Jeff Nordahl of J. Grove Farm on the composition of metric plant tags. The statement reads in part, quote, this issue was first brought to our attention after a metric tag was tested for contaminants and the plastic parts tested positive for low amounts of the chemicals lead, arsenic, and BPA. The laboratory tests were performed on a metric plant tag, not on cannabis. The tests performed were not appropriate to determine whether the chemicals found in the tags posed an exposure risk to employees or to consumers. Specifically, the testing was done in a manner that assumed workers would be exposed to the chemicals through inhalation or ingestion. This is very different from the ways in which the tags are handled. A tag is not intended to be inhaled or consumed, so measuring the chemical levels found in the tag through these test methods against the action levels set for cannabis flower does not align with exposure to a consumer or to an employee handling a tag at a cultivation site. The available data does not indicate that chemicals from the tags transferred to the cannabis plants, and additionally, our cannabis product testing requirements would identify these chemicals so they don't reach the consumer. Since November, DCC has been communicating on this topic with Metric and the California Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, also known as OEHHA, the state's Environmental Health Authority, which administers Prop 65. OEHHA conducted a preliminary review of the available data and information provided by Metric and the DCC. Based on the low levels of the chemicals found in the tags and information from Metric about the limited contact workers have with them, there is no evidence that workers are at risk. The concern for cannabis consumers is even lower. Currently, OEHHA does not believe the trace levels of the detected chemicals warrant a Proposition 65 warning. Metrics outside experts have independently confirmed that the tags are safe for use in cultivation environments and maintain their structural and functional integrity, end quote. Jeff Nordahl, who had originally tested Metrics tags, quickly responded to the DCC statement with some counterpoints. Namely, that a Prop 65 assessment would usually include wipe and touch testing to calculate workers' exposure to any Prop 65 materials. Jeff also pointed out that limited contact could mean a worker touching 1,000 tags in a given day for recently planted cannabis. He asked, quote, did they actually do a study or did they just refute the original lab test we sent them, end quote. The DCC did promise some follow-up on the recyclability of tags. The end of their statement reads, quote, recycling and waste disposal requirements vary by jurisdiction. DCC has reached out to CalRecycle for guidance on recycling metric tags and will report back in an upcoming licensee update, end quote. But many in the Emerald Triangle are asking the same question. Why do we need so many plastic tags in the first place? Even if proposed group tagging becomes reality for DCC licensees, it is likely farms will still need thousands of metric tags to stay compliant moving forward, regardless of their toxicity. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory the Tsingtaon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.